Welcome back, everybody, to the Business of Money podcast. I'm your host, Nia, where I teach financial intelligence to solopreneurs, because when your business is your paycheck, you can't afford to guess. Hopefully, everybody out there is doing well. I hope your business is thriving. I hope that you are learning and growing from running your business. I hope that it's giving you all the satisfaction you thought it could possibly give you, and that you are making incredible profits and living a life that you had envisioned, for starters. Let me just start you with that right there. I think being a business owner is like the best thing ever, and I'm putting more effort into mine, even though I'm working at Walmart. Part-time, I learned a lot about Walmart. I've talked about Walmart several times. I've learned a lot about retailing and protected networks and the flow of money through people working at the money center and working at customer service, taking inventory back, things like that. I say it every time. I'm gonna do a video of just the grocery store. It's the best lesson you can get in diversifying your products. Even if you are doing it yourself or you have your outsourcing, whatever the case may be, Walmart is like the best lesson ever. You do not have to work at Walmart, but being on the inside is very, very different. One thing I do when I wake up in the morning, I don't know if everybody else does this, I've been doing it pretty much a lot since. It's just a habit of mine. I like to write. I like to research and I like to write. And the first thing I do when I get up with my coffee, I don't journal. I don't want to know what my thoughts are. I want to know what's going on in the world and how I'm going to apply what I've learned or store it as my data for running my business, managing my money, looking at investments, or just generally what's going on in the world. I read Google News and I read Chrome News. Even though they're basically the same, sometimes I'll see the same type of content, but my feed, what pops up on my feed are Forbes, Inc., Entrepreneur, the Times of India, Wall Street Journal. A lot of the content is protected, but sometimes I just read the headlines, some political, not much, but mostly small business. And what's going on in the tech world, what's going on in, you know, just the world in general with AI and generative AI and AI agents and the labor market and, you know, things of that nature. Most people get up and watch television news and they hear about the murders, the robberies in the area, what happened down in Midtown, the closures of I-20, and yeah, I don't pay attention to regionals, no local stuff, because that doesn't help me. That kind of information scares people. And it keeps them boxed into, this is why I need a gun. This is how come I need to protect myself. Things like, I don't pay attention to that. I pay attention to what's going on globally, but more importantly, I see what other businesses are doing and I store it for later use, or how can I incorporate that into my business? For instance, I notice I scroll a lot and I'm on my phone. I don't open up my laptop. I wake up in the morning and the first thing I do is open up my email. Then I open up my Google and I sit there and I scroll. Sometimes I take notes, sometimes I don't, because I store a lot of information and I can, again, in my head, and I can reference it for later. Today, I got up. I still scrolled, but I said, I save stuff. I send articles that I can use for later in a podcast, or if I'm going to write about it in my blog or something I want to reference, I always send myself the article I'm reading to my messages. And that's how I store anything that I've read. I could bookmark it, but it's easier to send it to myself. So I send a lot of information to myself. A lot of it I've incorporated into my website and just my overall business in general. Well, today I said that I'm off, and well, I'm not off, but I don't go in until 2 to go to work. And I said, what do I really need to hone in on to position myself better personally that I could focus on to share with my community that I'm building and attracting? Because I build to attract. I didn't build just to build. I built to attract a certain kind of community, a like-minded community, but a community that resonates with what I'm sharing. And I believe that they will find me because I'm looking for them and they are looking for me. So I believe it's a reciprocal relationship. And I want to make sure that I'm sharing something I have personal knowledge, personal expertise, business expertise, a little combination, but something that I can position myself on to help them be better in their business, because it's helping me be better in a business. But it solves my problem first, and then I can figure out, okay, this is how I did it. Maybe I can help you too. That's the approach I take. Because I started my business to solve my problem. But a community, I'm helping solve their problems because I've solved the problem. I hope you think about your business the same way too. You got to be a little selfish on this one. But anyway, see how I get off on a tangent? I'm sorry. Anyway, so I'm sitting and I came. So I said, well, let me do some little bit of research about solopreneurs, because I'm a one person business. I'm a solopreneur. I will never have employees. I did not build a business to have employees. I believe employees cost too much money. Now, I understand it makes the business world go round. It really does, because you want to multiply yourself. Yeah, I don't want to do that. I believe in independent contractors, working with other businesses that have something I don't have, that need something I need, that they can provide me, and I can multiply myself that way, in a way that still helping. I just don't want you as my employee. I want you to be able to do it yourself, and you serve me and I can serve you. And a lot of people want to grow to have employees because they believe that employees help them manage their businesses better, until they recognize they're managing the person versus the business. Because that's a whole nother subject. I'm not going to go there because I can go off on a tangent. Anyway, so I said, well, what does the solopreneur market look like in 2026? I knew what it looked like in 2025, which is when I knew I didn't want employees. But I'm like, what does it look like today? And how big is this market that I'm trying to serve? Because this is who I'm serving. And what's going on? Just basic general information. And I came across these stats. I'm going to share them with you. The global one, this came from, I did a Google search. Well, how big is the solopreneurship? How big is the solopreneur market? In data terms, a solopreneur business is defined as a non-employer business, for starters. Now, I knew that because I had to do research when I was getting my MBA in financial management. And I did my MBA project was my business plan for really this business. And that was years ago. We're not going to tell you how many. I've stayed within that realm, which is why I knew the solopreneur market, or the non-employer market in data terms, meaning census data terms, how they find out how many one-person businesses there are. They're called non-employer firms. Anyway, the global one-person business solopreneur market in the U.S. is 29.8 million non-employer businesses, contributing more than $1.7 trillion annually to the economy. Worldwide, it's the primary wave of entrepreneurship, which is heavily driven by digital tools and now artificial intelligence as of 2025. This information comes from the U.S. Census data. Now I was reading an article, but their fact came from the U.S. Census. If you don't know what the U.S. Census data is, then you need to get some education, because you need to know what the overall business, that overall target market that you're serving, which you'll get from the census data. And then you drill that down into, because you want to know how big your market is, then you drill that down into your local, regional, things like that. That's a course. That's not this class. I mean, that's not this podcast. Anyway, and you hear my air on in the back. Maybe I'll turn that off. It's a little chilly. And I'm raw here on my podcast. I'm talking to you like you're sitting right in front of me, just so you know. Okay, I'll turn that off. So anyway. And I wrote it down. I won't post it. I'll post the source, so that you can look at it yourself. Here on the Business of Money podcast, if I have a resource that I use, I'll post it so you can check it out. It's only here on the Business of Money podcast. It's paid subscriber based. And if you are a paid subscriber, you can hear me. If you're not a paid subscriber, you can only see it, and you have to become a paid subscriber to even get the information. And that's what I do here on a Business of Money podcast. It's not available to everyone, just so you know, so that information is not out there. So you have the resource. Now, what you do with the resource is up to you. Anyway, so some key stats. In terms of market scale, the global one-person business in the U.S., 80% of all small businesses are one person. Globally, meaning internationally, up to 3 in 4 new entrepreneurs do not plan to hire additional employees. In terms of revenues, the average revenue of a one-person business is $58,000 annually. However, million-dollar one-person businesses are rapidly multiplying. Now, what I found interesting is $58,000 annually. So when we are looking at folks online saying they made $150,000, $300,000, $500,000, that's a very small percentage. And the U.S. data gets this information from the government, because it's printed out by the U.S. government. Tax returns is public information. So no one shows us our tax. That's why I never believe anybody when they say they make X amount of money. No one shows us their tax returns on how much money they actually make. It's a nice hook, but still, if that's the case with so many social media content providers telling us that they made X amount of money, show me a tax return, right? Show me a tax. I just want to see your tax return. Because this is where that information is coming from. Because the U.S. will compile data from those who file for their registration, meaning that they have an EIN number. and they might have LLC'd their business or gone through registration to form their business. So that data is public. You can go on to Georgia.gov and see how many people filed for LLC or corporation, S Corp, nonprofit, whatever. They'll show you that. And they'll give you, there's a whole list. So that data is available. The tax returns are public information. They can pull that data and see from protected data, of course, see how many people who have filed as a single member LLC, meaning you don't have any employees. And then they can look at payroll data. How many of them have employees? Well, you have to report that. So all of that data is public data. With employer, meaning that they have a W-2. I'm sorry, a W-4. A W-4 means you're an employee. A W-9 means you're an independent contractor. So all you have to do is pull the data on how many businesses have W-4s. That's where that data comes from. So this is when they say they have no employees, meaning there's no W-4 that's filed for that company. There's no W-2 that's issued at the end of the year, right? And they may be a single member LLC or a sole proprietor, right? And they filed a Schedule C. And the Schedule C is a pass-through through your 1040, and that income is reported for those that report. All right. So be wary when you hear about people saying they make so much money on YouTube. So the average revenue of a solopreneur is 50. That's good money. If you break that down, 50,000 is 5,000 a month. So that's what, 5,500 almost, just about, something like that. 60K, 5,000 is 60. So a little under 5,000 a month. That's good money. That's a nice, 50,000 is a benchmark, in my opinion, for a small business, if you're able to make that annually. Because now you've moved out of just a little bit of a business to something sustainable, and you're in S Corp territory where you could begin to possibly pay yourself as an employee if you're a one-person business. You don't have to, but you're not over the mark of 100 where you're paying different taxes. So for the average to be 58 is good. I don't know what the prior average was prior to, let's say, the pandemic, or when maybe in the 2000s, right? Early 2000s, late 1995, or maybe 1997. Let's even go back to 1992. It may be very different if you were going to look at the statistics. But anyway, with digital tools, you just need a mobile phone. I'm recording my podcast. I was always worried about recording my podcast so that people can see me. And then I recognize that's hindering my growth, because I don't always want to put my makeup on. I don't always want to do my hair. I don't always want to get ready for the camera. And I'm like, I have a phone. I could just record my podcast and people will listen to me. Right? Or they won't, right? But there's no one said I needed to show my face. That was me setting up my own limitation to how I was going to get the information out. And I'm telling you right now, it's okay to not show your face because I'm doing it. I should probably be sitting at the pool doing this, right? I might do that, but I go to work at 2. And once I get by the pool, I'm not going to want to go to work. And I don't have enough hours, PTO hours, to call out today. So I got to go to work. But anyway, these are the factors that are driving growth. I wrote all this down because this is information I'm building my business on. And if you're looking at the one-person business, your virtual assistants, your coaches, your real estate agents, your plumbers, your electricians, this is data you're going to need. Factors driving growth: AI and automation, leveraging AI to manage repetitive tasks, accounting, marketing, and scaling operations. digital infrastructure, no-code platforms, e-commerce infrastructure, building digital storefronts, and multinational businesses you can run from a laptop, and at this point, a phone. And then economic shifts is the final factor driving growth. Inflation concerns and desire for flexibility and autonomy have pushed a significant portion of the global workforce into solopreneurship since 2020. Well, we all got sent home during the pandemic. We didn't ask to be sent home. I didn't ask to be sent home. You didn't ask to be sent home. And we were griping about going home. Then we got home and recognized, hey, wait a minute. Hold on for a moment. Well, the world recognized. When I moved here to Atlanta, I was never really able to work from home. That's why I love Atlanta. Atlanta is so damn progressive. I was never able to work from home, never able to work from home. When I lived in Virginia, I knew that I had these two kids who were going through a divorce. I had these kids with me, and I needed to work from home one day because my kid was sick. And they were like, you can't work from home. But I have a computer. We have QuickBooks. And I'm always up on top of technology. And you're telling me I can't work from home for a day. My kid's sick. And I should be able to tap into my laptop, go remote inside my QuickBooks and still do my work. And if my work is all based on Excel, then send me a spreadsheet to work on because we have email. What do you mean we can't work from home? That was my thinking, and I got to work from home. But that was like, this is not going to be a regular thing to work from home. What? How am I going to balance raising these kids as a single parent and go to work? So I only live 5 minutes away from the job, but still. And right then and there, because I went to school online. So when someone tells me we can't do something remotely, I went to school online. I got 2 degrees online. One completely online, my bachelor's. And then my master's online, I only had to take my finance classes on campus. I couldn't take the finance classes on campus. Today you can, but back then I couldn't take any of my financial management classes online. I had to go all over Los Angeles and Orange County and Southern California taking these finance classes because they didn't offer them online. But all my other graduate courses were all online. Don't tell me what we can't do. That's not possible. I built my whole life around being online. Because when the internet came, that was the best thing ever. I'm like, this is the greatest thing. Why would we go out to work? So when I moved to Atlanta via New York, because I went back home for a while, and then I was going to go back to California, my cousin was like, you need to come down to Atlanta. And I was like, I've never been south. I don't know what Atlanta is. I'm going back to California because I had already lived in California for like, I don't know, 14, 15 years. She's like, come to Atlanta. I said, okay. I came to Atlanta. I was here 48 hours and I was a substitute teacher because again, my oldest was still in high school and I wanted to be around. I like to be around my goal was to be around my kids until they graduated high school, period. That was my whole goal. That's what I set out to do, and I accomplished that goal. So I had my oldest son. My youngest was with my ex-husband and moved to Atlanta. My son went away to school. Oldest went away to school to finish school. And then my youngest, he was with his dad, and then he came to live with me. And I'm now here in Atlanta staying at my cousin's until she's like, you can stay with me until you find a place. And I think I was there for maybe 6 months. But now I had my youngest with me who's in middle school. And I'm like, all right, I got to find a job where I can still stay home with my son, my youngest. And my cousin, she gets up, she sits on her couch and she logs into her computer. What are you doing? You know, I'm there for a few days. Well, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to work. You work from home? She's like, yep, she was tech something, customers, tech support, something like that. Something where she was making really good money. I'm like, oh, I want to work from home because I'm watching her do it. And I said, that's all I want to do is work from home. so I can be, because she was around her kid while he was growing up. But she's like, yeah, I always work from home. What? Yeah, I have this ability to work from home. Bet. And that has been my goal and is still my goal. And when I mean work from home, meaning that I'm not going into an office, right? It didn't matter how I was going to be. And I knew I wanted to work for myself. That's it. I've already started. I did it before. And I'm like, I'm going to go back to that. So to move this story forward, I saw the value of working from home, from a laptop, gave me flexibility and autonomy. I can work my way. I'm very self-directed and I have my goals. I reach my goals and all you need to do is give me the assignment and let me go. And I was able to do that prior to the pandemic when I got a job and I was teaching accounting online. And I was like, perfect. And that, and from which is where WWI comes in, all my courses are online. Cause I'm like, there's no way that someone should have to take my course and sit inside a classroom unless we're in my conference room and there's coffee and donuts and bagels and we're eating and learning. I will never, ever hold any workshop event or anything that does not have food and basically coffee and something to eat. Because I used to hate going down and having to pay for coffee and donuts. So when I, from teaching online to teaching in the classroom after the pandemic, and I had to go into a classroom and I'm like, this is wild. But the experience taught me that I never want to go into a classroom ever again unless it's on my terms. And I never want to be in a formal classroom ever again. They're ugly. And then my students would bring food. I'd make sure we'd have coffee. We'd bring donuts. And I'm like, I'll never do something that doesn't have. Don't ever invite Miss Patrick. Don't ever invite your host to any of your events and they don't have food. I'm telling you, community, right now. I'm telling you straightforward. Don't ever invite me to any event that you have, seminar, workshop, course, where I got to go and sit someplace and there's no coffee, donuts, bagels, something to nosh on. I don't need a four-course spread. I need coffee, juice, mimosa, cocktail, something. Bagel, croissant, cream cheese, a muffin, nothing healthy. I don't mind. Now, what I won't mind is a spinach wrap, Caesar chicken wrap. Now, you can serve me that. You can serve me a Caesar chicken salad. I don't care. But you're going to feed me. I'm telling you, you're going to feed Miss Patrick because I'm going to feed you. Excuse me. I'm letting you know ahead of time. Right? Everything I do has food and drink involved. Because I'm like, you're not going to get me into a room and I'm not going to be able to eat and drink. Absolutely not. I used to hate going into meetings and they never, even when I worked, when I was a department chair at a school, because I got promoted to department chair after teaching accounting for about 6 years. They would have meetings. I'm like, where's the coffee? Where's the orange juice and where's the bagels for these Tuesday meetings we have to have every day? We have a whole cafeteria. They should be serving us food while we sit here. Sometimes they include food. Sometimes they did not. No, I need consistency. I need food every single time because I'm trying to digest the bullshit that you have me digesting. You might as well feed me at the same time. See, that's how I looked at that. Every meeting should have food. In my company, every meeting has food, period. And it's just a company of one. See how that gets done? So I say that to say this, is that one, you can direct how your company is operating. But two, everything can be done online. There's no reason for you to have to go out to some place and do business when we still have Zoom and Meet. And now we're moving to this. Everybody's tired of working remotely. Now they want to go into office, the office for collaboration. Says who? That's what libraries are for. They have these, maybe I'll do a tour of a library, our library. Live co-working spaces still exist. You do not operate in a vacuum when you are a solopreneur. Libraries have meeting rooms that you can reserve. And you can meet with a group of people, charge them money, see if you can have food, or a plan for lunch someplace, or you just want that collaboration with others. If you have an apartment community, you can go out, and if they have a social room or someplace that you can work, have a group of people that you can co-work with. You're not isolated anymore, is my point. So to stay on the economic shifts where the flexibility and autonomy has pushed a significant portion of the global workforce into the solopreneurship since 2020 with the pandemic, you sent us home, now we like working from home. Now people feel they need to be able to collaborate and they want you to return to office. Yeah, not this girl. Not this girl, not this one. I don't need that. I don't need the, because I run my own company. So I get to make the decisions. And you get to run your company, you get to make the decisions. Okay, let's move on so that I am not going to waste your time. Top industries for solopreneurship, occupational trade, your electricians, your plumbers, your personal trainers, your consultants, your digital content creators, your folks that are in e-commerce, maybe they provide e-commerce, app development, micro software as service, and then content, and of course, education, the creator economy, the newsletters, courses, podcasts, and digital media that they have monetized. And my resource is not just the Google, that's where I read the article. It's a website called Solo Business Hub, and it's solobusinesshub.com, and they give you all these stats on the solopreneurship community, and they're selling you how to become, you know, the solopreneur and taking courses and things like that. If you want to participate in that, that's fine. But I love that they provided these stats, and these stats are backed up with facts. Like I said, they cite their sources, the U.S. Census data, CNBC. Was it CNBC? Right. They did an article on solopreneurship as well. Owning their own income in the one-person economy was a CNBC article. And then there are all other data sources are QuickBooks and business registration. So the challenges facing solopreneurs, which face unique financial challenges, which I knew a long time ago as a one-person business solopreneur, financial management complexities, cash flow management, tax optimization, access to funding for growth and retirement planning without employer benefits. Well, that's the community. This financial management complexity is the business of WWI. With the Money Smart Small Business Program and the Women's Wealth Strategy Program, those are programs to help you better manage your finances in your business. I'm considering adding a personal section under for a program to help those with business credit and banking relationships and just managing your overall personal finance. There's a lot of information out on personal finance, though. Good information as well. And not so much for the business side for solopreneurs, right? So I don't know. I'd have to kind of do my research and see how that's going to work out for me personally if I wanted to do that. But those are some of the financial management complexities which I try to help bridge that gap between where the hell did my money go this month? How do I pay myself? Do I add employees? How much am I spending on subscriptions? Am I actually investing in the right tools to help me run my business better? And why I'm never, ever going to get QuickBooks, but I can't see any real data about my business. And how do I get off of, I don't have enough money to keep my Etsy subscription going. And now I look like I got to find a job because nobody's buying my products. How am I going to keep my business going and still try to earn a profit, but my business takes up my time and I work full time? Or I work full time and I want to get the hell out of this job and my business is not taking off so fast because no one's liking my videos. I'm not getting enough traction. I'm not doing enough social media because I'm tired. I got these kids. I got this dude. I got a whole lot of shit going on. How am I going to make the transition? That's what WWI is for. I focus on the money part and the cash flow because the cash flow helps you get out of any situation that you need to get out of. Whether it's a business you don't like, a job you don't like, a relationship you don't like, a product category you can't stand, you look at that cash flow and you'd be like, is the money worth me putting all this time into it? Am I getting a fast enough inflow from what I've focused on and invested in? And if not, I need to find a different strategy. So let's see. Another one was scaling strategies for solopreneurs, hiring virtual teams. Yes, 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 yes. Do not hire employees. They'll drain your cash flow. Don't look at the benefits. I promise you, you'll spend more time trying to figure out how to pay them because you don't know what a business downturn looks like. And until you know what a business downturn looks like, meaning your invoices aren't being paid as fast anymore because you're still invoicing. You're not having to pay you ahead of time. They aren't willing to pay a deposit or a retainer, or they want to negotiate you down from your deposit or your retainer. The bills are coming in a few days faster or a few days earlier. Let's see, who was it that I paid for my dental and my vision insurance? My healthcare is through the marketplace. That's one of the good points of being a solopreneur is that I get to take advantage of some of these services. And one of them was getting my healthcare through the marketplace. So I didn't have to worry about having a full-time job to have healthcare. But I have to pay for my vision and I have to pay for my dental insurance. And I got the best I could. So my payment's like almost $100. And it's worth it because I need a lot of work. But my billing date is the 7th. I have it written down. And it's on my site where I make my payment that my payment is due on the 7th, right? And today is the 6th. I'll pay it tomorrow. It's already scheduled to pay. But I'll put the money in for it to be scheduled to pay because all my household bills go through one account and it's a zero sum account. Once all the money goes in, it's immediately going out with some left in savings, a percentage of it, but it's a zero sum account. I don't keep extra money in there. That's just my household account and it's zero sum. So that way anything budgeted is in, gets paid and goes out. I have an account for everything. I have other accounts for everything else. Anyway, that's how I manage my household cash flow. Anyway, so last week, let's say the 3rd, because today is only the 6th. The 3rd, they want to draft a payment. And then I got a notice saying my payment is late. No, now, that's supposed to scare me. No, it's not. My payment's not due till the 7th. And you can't draft I don't care what your policy is. You won't be drafting my payment until the 7th, because that's when I have it scheduled. But I saw a notice saying my payment was late. No, it's not. Same thing for my rent. My rent is due on the first. We have until the 5th to pay our rent. I split my rent up in payments. I have a plan with my community where I can split my payment up in two. So when I make my first payment, my whole bill is paid. My whole rent is paid, but I only have to pay the major portion of it. And then at the end of the month, I pay the remaining portion, which is a credit for me, and it gets reported on my credit report, which is really neat because now my rent payments get paid, show up on my credit report. And I have an excellent payment history, obviously. But I can schedule when I want that first and second payment to come out. That's the flexibility I like. So I can schedule my payment all the way up to the 5th. And after the 5th, I don't have that option. Then I have to pay my rent in full. And then I have a late fee. The late fee is $50. The second payment, I can schedule all the way to the end of the month. So prior to other apartments, there wasn't this flexibility. You had to pay all the rent up front. Yet that caps my cash flow. And I'm going to give you all my money at the beginning of the month, and then I can't get anything done in my apartment. Absolutely not. It gives me a little bit more power. At least I feel a little bit more empowered to where my rent's still paid in full. And now I have a credit that I'm paying the credit back. And apparently, if you don't pay the credit back after 30 days, you get kicked off the system, which you should, because it's a privilege to be on the system. Somebody created this program just for me, is the way I look at it, because that's how I'm able to manage my cash flow in my personal business. So I offer the same thing on my website with Buy Now, Pay Later. So that when they want to buy a course on my site, you don't have to pay the full $1,200. You can pay in as many payments as the system or the payment processor allows you. But I get the full payment. And that flexibility is needed today because people are strapped. And I can turn it off and on as I want. Excuse me, which I love. This way I can draw folks who want to learn. They have access to financial management content and they don't have to get an MBA to do it. And everything is action oriented. It is, you're learning a concept. Money Smart Small Business is an action oriented. Money Smart Small Business is just videos. But the Women's Wealth Strategy, I built myself. Money Smart is a program I already had. Women's Wealth Strategy program is all action oriented. It is something you have to do. And I believe in practical education. Today, you cannot go to school and get an MBA. I have an MBA. I couldn't get a job here in Atlanta. That's why I say I love Atlanta, because I can run a business here in Atlanta. Getting a job in Atlanta was very hard. Something's wrong with the job market. The job markets are fucked up. So I say, when I have a school, on my online school, you have to do something. And when I taught, I would tell my students, I do not give you something you cannot learn from. I can give you case studies, I can give you theories, but most of my students ran businesses and they were learning business to run their business better. And mostly account, most people don't know accounting, right? They know how to do marketing, they know how to, they can talk, but they don't know how to keep track of their business numbers. So anytime I had my students, like if they were doing marketing, they had to do a marketing project, and they were immigrants. So they were coming into the country to learn to become a citizen, and they chose the United States as their new home versus Australia or Canada. And I taught them business concepts. So with their marketing, they had to do a marketing plan. If they learned about business management, they had to put together a management plan. If we were doing something financial, they had to put together like a financial plan. Like there was always something they had to do to apply the knowledge. College doesn't allow you to apply the knowledge. Traditional college. The school I went to, I had to do a this is why I loved my school. My sister went to the same school. She hated it. She was like, I didn't like it. I don't think I learned anything. See, I did. My every class I took, I had to do a project related to that course. The best one was my project management course, where my strategic project management course, where we had to put together a project. We had to work in teams, which I learned I do not like teams because I don't like working with other people. So I had to learn to work with people. But the teacher and every single teacher in my program were under the guidance of it had to be practical, something they can, a skill they can put to use, and it had to involve presentation every single course. You couldn't just do a project. You had to do a project and present it at the end of every class. So the project management, we did like, I think I did like a strategic audit. Then I had to present that audit with my team and individually. So I had to take all the knowledge I learned from each course and put together something at the end of the course. And that was my final, in addition to a written exam. So not only did I learn theory, I learned practical applications for every single course I took. Same thing for my finance classes. I had to do a financial analysis and present it with dashboards and charts and things like that. If I was taking investment analysis, I had to put together an investment assessment for a pretend client. Like, there was nothing that wasn't practical, which is why I teach practical applications in my courses, just so you know. And even on my blog post, they're practical because I can tell you something, but if you can't apply it, you won't learn it. Schools did not teach that today. They just teach you theory and throw you out into the world and tell you good luck, right? So, to get back to, I don't know how I got off on that tangent, but to get back to this article on solopreneurship, scaling strategies, hiring virtual teams, which is what I was talking about, creating passive income, build strategic partnerships, develop scalable business models that do not require personal involvement. And again, that ties up into your website. You should have some digital products on your site. So you can coach your clients through your digital products. You can mentor your clients through your personal motivational videos that sit behind a paywall. You don't have to charge them hundreds of dollars, $3.99, and then you get the volume. But at least you'd have that coming in to attract. And then you can build another tier. You can do $7.99. And that's something that's even more personal. And then the $9.99 is they get to have the personal one touch with you. You should have some guides on your site. Even if you keep them in a Google Drive and you send it through an email, like there's so many different ways to do it. But you want to take what you're doing for the client and you want to put it into something that they can buy every, whether you are up at night or not, they can buy your product. They can book your time, but your time is valuable. So you don't want to book my time? Take a course. Read a blog post. Do something. Visit my YouTube. But you want to keep them on your site. You don't want to take them outside of your ecosystem. And that's how you scale your business. And you're just multiplying your expertise, right? AI helps you put all that together. AI helped me put everything together. I gave AI all of my case studies. And I said, here's all my case studies. And I wrote them out first and has a reservoir of my case studies. Help me build content around my case studies. Which is how I came up with the digital products that you see. And it helped me write it. But it came from me giving it information, my ideas, my thoughts, my background, my history, just chatting with chat, like it's, I'm talking to someone. Like I would never be able to convey that to somebody sitting in front of me and saying, now take my case studies. And no, that's their thoughts and their ideas. This one is a program that to this day understands WWI because it's all under WWI framework. But even when I go over to my personal ChatGPT, because sometimes I switch between the two because I don't always want to pay the $20. And then, you know, the time runs out and all that extra shit. Well, I'll go over and put WWI information in there also, because I don't write my ChatGPT subscription off because I'm not always going to keep it. Like I said, I'd rather use the free version, let it time out. I got like four different accounts. I don't need to pay for it. Till they make me pay for it, I don't need all the extra, but it still remembers everything. So you want to use AI to help you scale your digital business, to create some process for you to have the conversation and practice asking for more money from your clients and paying your bills. You know, it talks to you. Help me have a conversation so that all my clients understand, or help me draft an email that I can send out to all my clients saying that we're now moving to a digital platform and payment has to be paid before services are rendered. And this changeover is going to happen within the next 90 days. If you don't consider yourself a client anymore, thank you very much. Your services have been wonderful. But for those who choose to stay with me, here's the added benefit. See, that's how you make that transition. Because a lot of people are afraid to raise their prices and they're afraid to change up their businesses because they're afraid to lose their clients, which means you aren't even willing to take a risk on your own business so that you have a better lifestyle. Nope, not me. I'll burn the whole damn thing down and start completely from scratch and find me new clients. That's how flexible you have to be. You have to be willing to burn the whole damn thing down. Because if it's not giving you what you want and you're like, why is this client calling me at 10 o'clock at night? For what? Why are you allowing a client to call you? Well, they're overseas. How come they aren't talking to a chatbot? How come you haven't moved that to a virtual team, someone over there who can handle that, and they work for you as an independent contractor and you take most of the money and give them 20%? And create a platform. And now you have somebody over there that is doing the same work you're doing. You just handed it off to them who has a business and be like, look, you're on my platform. Here's why you're going to pay a subscription. And now you can do this. And you take 80. I take 80. You take 20. You can stay on my platform. If you won't do it, somebody else will. Like, that's how global we are. And I'm always amazed that people are like, oh, I have to do it this way because your clients don't care about you. They will leave you before you leave them. And they're shopping you around. They're shopping you around. My clients will shop me around. And they're supposed to. Because I'm a shop around for the best deal. Period. If I find someone better to do it for me, I'm gonna do that. There's no more. It's not a matter of loyalty. It's a matter of managing my costs and managing my cash flow, period. To wrap up, let's see. Nope, I got two more. Some tech trends for solopreneurs, artificial intelligence integration tools, such as ChatGPT for content generation, like I said. Design automation, which is Canva. You can set it to help you do all your social media content scheduling. Customer service using a chatbot. Data analysis, business intelligence tools. That would be your QuickBooks and things like that to get the data on your clients. But I use ChatGPT, Canva, and I have a chatbot on my website that are updated from focusing just on accounting, taxes, and cash flow to directing them to my products and services. And that came from an article as well that I was reading in Google. And this woman worked for a law firm and she became a paralegal. And seeing how paralegals operated, she created this AI automation tool to help filter the workflow for the lawyers in terms of what documents were needed. And once the documents were identified, then that whoever the document belonged to went to a particular lawyer. Let's put it to you that way. And I was like, so it helped with a client coming onto the site or a potential client coming onto the site, either or, and directing the traffic through the chatbot. And it helped increase revenues because it saved the lawyer's time from that initial onboarding or getting to paperwork, where this AI did the workflow processing for the lawyers. Brilliant. And I was like, oh, I'm putting that on my site. So I went to ChatGPT and I'm like, this is what I saw. This is what I want to do. How can I do the same thing? And it helped me set up my chatbot that you can ask it two questions max. And from those two questions, no matter what you put in there, it will direct you to my product or to a service. So if you ask a question and you keep asking a question, it will direct you to, you might want to book a private session. If you ask another product, to what doesn't matter, you might want to take a course, check out a blog post, go to the podcast. It leads that chat by leads you to a product or a service for me. And since my courses are all online and they're all self-paced, they can start the course. They want to book my time. It will take them to my booking app and they can only book two time slots, 9:30 to 10:30 and 10:30 to an 11 to 12:30, something like that. And it's only offered, I think, like 3 days a week because I'm not going to be tied up in client work. Which leads me to this. From that, I read another article and it said, was talking about being caught up in client work and how you don't always want to be caught up in client work. So since I'm in a financial analyst also, like how am I going to, and looking at my time and where all of my revenue is stacked at, I had ChatGPT analyze all the products on my website and then see where I'm do an analysis of my products and services and tell me where I'm at. And in terms of the breakout of my revenue, well, I was heavy on the client side and not heavy on the digital courses and the digital products. And it said to me, ChatGPT said to me, you said you didn't want to deal with clients, but 80% of your work is 80% of your revenues are from clients. The other 50% is broken up between your digital courses and your digital products. But you said you didn't want to do client work because my price was high. So my advisory service at one point was $2,500. And it said, if you don't want to do client work, don't price your services high. Price your services low, break it, and then only go on and be available certain times a day so that most of your revenue will come from your courses and then your digital products based on your pricing. Then bundle up all of your digital products to four products. And that way you'll get the most value out of your digital products, then drop the price. And that way that's your little lead generator for your courses. You could keep those high and then drop your services down to $200. And now you're much more balanced according to the goals you set, where you just wanted to be more passive oriented in terms of serving your clients. And you can focus on other things like events. And now once your events go up, then you can have events that can be the bulk of your ongoing revenue. Right. And you'll get more from the events because they're high touch points. Brilliant. That's how you use AI generated integration tools to analyze. But if you don't have a website, how do you do that? Even if you have an Etsy, I don't know if Etsy allows you services. It probably does. But you want to be able to have that kind of insight into your business. And is it aligning with your goals? And if you aren't sitting down and saying to yourself, I'm so tired of dealing with these damn clients. How am I going to get out of this? And you think it's just whatever. Just have ChatGPT analyze your website. ChatGPT knows my website. I plug my website into a tool that can see my website, and it can see everything on it because I put it in ChatGPT as a text, and it can see my whole website, which is how I refined my website over the months before it was really released. I played with it so that it's aligned with my lifestyle goals. It'll generate me revenue. It'll generate me recurring revenue, and it generates me passive revenue. Now I'm looking at a tool that I can see how many people sign up for my courses, my products, and how many, you know, actually buy that my visitors will see. I think that's a great tool. It's not necessarily free. I have to play around with it. But that's another way for me to see my money in action every single time somebody buys my products. That way I will not have to wait until I get a notification. I can see it. And others can see that as well, that my products are being sold. That stimulates demand. Like, there's all these tools out there that are available to us. So to wrap up, some of the areas where you can build your passive income, business coaching, mentoring, these are the ones that are popular within solopreneurship. Business coaching and mentoring, specialized industry experience, and sharing that experience, print-on-demand digital courses, and subscription-based services, like I've been saying. Monetize your podcast. Put it behind a paywall. Monetize your blog post. Stick it behind a paywall. Monetize your newsletter. Stick it behind a paywall. Don't stick it on Substack. I don't understand. People want to go to these platforms. It's not that you can't make money. It's just that you don't own the process. And I'll end with this. I said it with me talking, but I didn't say it publicly. I pay for YouTube so that I don't have to watch the ads. I did the free YouTube. I'll never go back to free YouTube again. I can't stand it. The premium allows me to avoid those damn ads. It solves my problem. That's how you have to think of yourself. How are you going to solve your customers' problems? What's the friction? Where's the bottleneck? But I also say this, that I do not like X and Threads and TikTok, and they're free. So I don't really put too much time into it. Pinterest I like because I'm always on it. I'm looking at the pretty pictures, but I have my stuff on Pinterest because it's a great search engine from what I understand. And I'm on LinkedIn, which is the best ever, never paying for it, but best ever because I've set my LinkedIn profile up like my store. And I've only highlighted my business and my product. So you want to rethink your social profile. But now I said that I pay for YouTube because YouTube made me pay right from the beginning. Guess who's now jumping into making people pay? Freemium is almost over. Now your social media accounts are starting to make folks pay, and they're starting, especially Meta, they're starting to test out you having. First, they wanted you to do the blue check and verification. Yeah, no. And I have to get back on my LinkedIn because they wanted me to verify my account. I'm really mad about that. But now your social media is going to start making you pay. And I want to know, are you going to pay for it? Because I know I'm not. I will use their free version. But now they've already been playing with the algorithm with you, hoping that you get in front of your audience. And now they don't, you know, ads have worn, you know, they'll always be there. But why not make all these people pay? If they want to pay, they got to pay to play. And so you're going to see a lot of changes with content creation and how it gets put out into the platform community versus taking that platform community off of that platform and into your own ecosystem, and they stay with you behind a paywall so that you don't lose your audience. Because I think a lot of content creators are going to lose their audience. The algorithm is not working anymore. People are posting and they're not seeing it. It's a whole bunch of stuff. I know I posted on, I use Eventbrite for my events. And I couldn't see my own event when I finished making my event and I couldn't find it. And I was like, how I can't find the event I've made? Nope. I still have Eventbrite, but I have them connect to my website. Everything needs to go back to your website when you're a solopreneur. And I believe it at that. Okay. So I've talked. I've been on here a long time. My name is Nia. I am the CEO of Women's Wealth Institute. This is the Business of Money podcast, a little media property of Women's Wealth Institute. Hopefully, if you stay with me, thank you very much. There's more to come. If I lost you along the way, then you can't hear this part. But thank you for those who stayed with me, and I'll check you on the next one.